There are a lot of the Buddhist teachings that people don't take seriously. One of them is the verse in the Dhammapada, that greater than someone who gains victory over 1,000,000 people is someone who gains victory over him or herself. Sounds like a nice sentiment, and people just toss it away, say it's not practical, because we live in a world where you have to beat other people. Of course, that makes sense only if you think of the short term, because the victory you get over other people doesn't end the story. You can wipe them out, and they come back. They get reborn. They get reborn with a sense of animosity. Some people were born for the sake of revenge. So that way of dealing with problems in the world doesn't end them. Think of the Buddha and his insight that everywhere you would look in the world for any happiness, someone else has already laid claim to it, and you'd have to fight them off if you wanted a piece of that. So what was he going to do? Was he going to fight them off? He turned around and looked in his own heart, and he realized that there was an arrow in the heart, the suffering with which he was making himself miserable, that he had shot himself basically with that arrow. You know the story, there's the arrow of pain, say. And you shoot yourself with another arrow with your commentary on the pain. That's the arrow that sticks. That's the arrow that hurts. And that's the arrow you can pull out. If the Buddha were the sort of person who can get frustrated, you can imagine his frustration saying things over and over and over again, and people not listening. You can also understand why, after his awakening, he hesitated to teach others, realizing that his message was one that a lot of people would have trouble understanding. There would be some people who would understand it, and for their sake he actually taught, but a lot of people don't. And so the teachings are there. And it's up to us to decide that if we actually took the Buddha seriously, we'd actually benefit a lot. How do you gain victory over yourself? Well, you realize you've got a whole passel of attitudes inside the mind. That's why we use the image of the committee. And as the different committee members get up to have their say, you find yourself playing the role of that member. This is what becoming is all about. You take on an identity. But you can take on so many different identities in very quick succession. And you have to figure out which identity of the mind is the wisest, that really does want long-term welfare and happiness and is willing to do whatever is needed. That's an identity you want to hold on to. That's the one you want to listen to. As for any other identities that come up and contest that, you've got to learn how to step out of them. Even though it feels like you are the one who is greedy or you are the one who is angry, it's better to see it simply as a voice in the mind. And when you step back from the voice, that's the beginning of discernment. As the Buddha said, discernment is a matter of seeing things as separate. We hear so much about the wisdom of oneness, but we don't hear it from the Buddha. He says you have to learn to see individual events in the mind as individual events, for the purpose of getting past them, for the purpose of gaining victory over them, if they're unskillful. Because as long as you identify with them, it's going to be hard. It's like stabbing yourself if you're trying to gain victory over them. But if you realize, okay, it's not really me, it's just an event in the mind, and I have the choice of going with it or not, that's when you can have that inner victory. So we're sitting here meditating. A lot of different voices are going to keep coming up in the mind right now. So you want to get some practice in saying no to the unskillful ones. Of course, it doesn't start with meditation practice. It starts with the precepts. In some cases, you could say it starts with the act of generosity. Part of you wants to hold on to something. Another part realizes that there's a greater happiness that comes from giving it away. The first voice may say, well, I'm going to be poor. I'm going to be lacking. And the other voice says, what? Lacking in what? Maybe lacking in that taste of that thing, whatever it was, if it was food, or the little bit of enjoyment you get from whatever the thing was. But there's something else that compensates for that. You are making a trade. You get a sense of inner worth. You get a sense of fellow feeling. The same with the precepts. You have to say no to any inclination that would kill or steal, have illicit sex, lie, take intoxicants. Some of those are obviously unskillful. It's interesting that for most people, the easiest precept to break, the one against lying, is the one that the Buddha took most seriously. He says, if you feel no shame at telling a deliberate lie, there's no evil that you might not do. And you look around us. There's so many people who say, well, there are certain circumstances where you have to lie, or it's the moral thing to do, to protect this, protect that. But try taking the Buddha seriously. Because if you lie, you give people misinformation, and many times people will base a lot of their decisions in life on that misinformation. You're contributing to their delusion. On the one hand, and if they find you out that it was a lie, then they learn not to trust you. And from that point on, everything you say will have a question mark in their mind. So you lose out in a really important way. And yet the world holds on to the things, holds on to the reasons that would make it seem reasonable to lie, or to kill, or to steal. And so you have to learn how to disidentify with those parts of the world that you've internalized. And so as you've learned how to say no to certain impulses inside, train your mind, focus on your intentions, do the precepts, you're coming to the meditation with the right frame of mind and with some very important skills. And the concentration allows you to go deeper, because after all, as you're meditating here, you've got the breath. You've got yourself talking to yourself about the breath. You've got the perceptions that you have around the breath. What is the breath doing right now? Where is it going in the body? And then there are the feelings that arise from your direct thought and evaluation and your perceptions. You begin to realize that the feelings are there, not just willy-nilly. They're not totally the result of past karma. They're based on what you're doing right now. So you turn to look more and more at your own actions right now. And you realize you've got bodily fabrication with the breath, verbal fabrication with the way you're talking to yourself, mental fabrication, your feelings and perceptions. You see these things clearly because they go into making up your concentration. And once you start seeing them clearly, then you can see them in other parts of your life. Say when anger comes, you breathe in a certain way that aggravates the anger. You talk to yourself in ways that aggravate the anger. You hold certain perceptions in mind, and they're feelings that come from the breathing and the directed thought and evaluation to make you feel that you've got to get the anger out. You've got to act on it. But the lesson you've learned from the concentration is that you can change all of these things. And this is where you want to identify with the voice in the mind that says, victory over yourself is better than victory over 1,000,000 people. So it's worth your while to breathe in a new way that calms you down, to talk to yourself in a way that pulls you out of the anger. And can argue with the voices in the mind that say, well, I'm going to gain advantage from the anger or acting on it. I get what I want. people listen to me unless I'm angry, that kind of thing. And then whatever the perceptions are that aggravate the anger, question those. And you find you're actually creating new feelings in the body, new feelings in the mind. And there's not that felt need to express the anger to get it out of your system. You can get it out of your system by the way you breathe, by the way you talk to yourself. But the important thing is you have the value that acting on anger is not in your best interest. And as for the voice that says, well, nothing gets done, things get done a lot better when you see that something is wrong and you're not angry about it. I was talking with an executive in a company just the other day. He's saying his big problem is that he has his temper tantrums when he deals with his employees. And because he'd heard a lot of Buddhist teachings say, well, don't hold other people to such high standards. Learn to be more accepting. He thought that's the kind of advice I would give him. I said, no. If your standards are high, that's a good thing. But being angry is not going to get other people to want to meet your standards. There got to be other ways that you can make it more attractive. Think of that old story of the sun and the wind cloud. The sun and the wind got into an argument one day, as to which was more powerful. And they saw this man walking along a road with a cloak. And the wind said, well, let's see if you can get the man to lose his cloak. So the wind blew and blew and blew on the man. And the more the wind blew, the tighter he held his cloak to him. So then it was the sun's turn. The sun just beamed. As it got warmer and warmer, the man took the cloak off of his own free will. So again, this is a story we think, well, you tell this to children to make them behave. But it's not a story for real life. That's our problem. We treat all these important stories as fables. They're okay to tell a child, but not for real people in real life. And as a result, the wisdom that gets passed down from the past just gets tossed away. So take the Buddha seriously. It really is better to gain victory over yourself than it is to gain victory over the people around you. Everybody benefits that way.